So let's try it again. We can do that too. Together, please. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Now, you may have seen that video before. I stole it. Straight off of YouTube. Didn't even do any editing to it. Just ripped it straight off of YouTube and decided to put it out there. If you go out into our front back welcome area, there's a little brochure there that has that same picture explained on it, that the separation from God. And well, today we're going to begin talking about gifts. Now, kind of appropriate because Thursday was Thanksgiving, and Friday in our society is what is known as Black Friday, which is when everybody's supposed to go out and buy Christmas presents, right? Yeah, I don't go buy any Christmas presents on Black Friday. As a matter of fact, I wait for Cyber Monday, which is tomorrow. That's when I shop. You know why? They bring it to me. Yeah, I don't have to go anywhere. They just bring it to my house. So, but sort of after Thanksgiving is when we officially go into kind of our holiday mode. Some of us have already put up our Christmas trees. Others of us have not. Bud and Patty were actually here on Saturday swapping out fall decorations for the beginning of Christmas decorations. The stuff is out front advertising the Christmas Eve service. Over in the park, they got it all lit up and ready to go. We are officially entering into the Christmas season, which usually begins to talk about gifts. And, you know, usually when it comes to gifts, we make our list. My sons do this every year. They make a list of the things that they hope to indeed find under a tree or in a stocking on a Christmas morning. But we make our list of the things that we want. They're the things that we are intending to get. And, well, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But for us to appreciate it, what's going to be happening is we need to define the word gift. For us to totally get into what today's sermon is about, we have to define gift. And so I did what you always do when you're going to define something. Where do you go? The dictionary. Logical place. And so Mr. Webster defines the word gift this way. A thing given willingly to someone without payment. Now, that's an important definition because of that word willingly. You know, I have people, well, not on my list, because our Christmas list got very small because we went around and ended this a few years ago. But it was a year that me and my sisters used to exchange gifts. And we had this year that one year they gave us a set of towels. And we gave each of them a set of towels. And so everybody got two sets of towels from each other. And we finally decided, this is silly. You know, I could have went out and bought my own towels. And I probably would have liked my towels better anyway. So we decided, you know what? We're just kind of doing this. Let's take the money we spend on gifts and let's go out to have a meal together. And so we stopped doing the gift-giving thing. But it has to be something that's willingly. If you feel obligated to give a gift, you understand it's not a gift. You gave it because it's something you're supposed to do. If it's something that you're given because you owe somebody, you feel like, well, they gave me a gift so I have to give them a gift, that's not a gift. That's called a payment. Okay? So the idea behind a gift is something that was given willingly without payment. It's not a payment. Somebody does not give you a gift because you did something nice for them, because you're on some kind of a special list. You were given a gift because that person had something to think about when they thought of your name. It's not something that you deserve. You know, it's kind of funny when we begin to talk about the idea of a gift. A lot of times we think because it's Christmas time, and because my last name starts a certain way, then I deserve a gift from that person. Don't we think that way? Come on, be honest, ladies. If you're married, if Christmas morning came and there was no present under the tree, if it did not say from your husband, what's the odds he's going to get his dinner cooked at night? Probably not very good, right? Because you do so much for your husband, you deserve to have something underneath the tree. Now maybe you do, but you do understand. A gift is not something that you absolutely deserve. You see, when the Bible talks about a gift in Romans chapter 6, verse 23, it says, "For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life in Jesus Christ our Lord." And we need to understand that the idea of a gift. See, I have a job out in the world. And I spend hours, well, not last week, I was on vacation last week, but most week I spend hours going and doing work for a company called LexisNexis. And twice a month, they put money into my account. Is it a gift? No. No, it's called payment. It's called, I am owed because I earned it. So in God's way of looking at this idea of a gift, it is not something that I am owed. So we're going to talk about the gift that he gave. Last week we began talking in John 3:16. We started out 2 weeks ago with the words for God. And we talked about God and who God is and how God shapes up in our universe. And we talked about he's creator and what an awesome being that he is. And then last week we talked about those two words, you know, the words of whosoever, excuse me, I'm going to have one of those mornings, whosoever, and the word love. And we found out that God loves everybody regardless of your past, regardless of your present, regardless of what you think you've done that he can't forgive. God says, I love it all. I can look at it all with a loving heart. But here's the thing. Love has to have two other things to make it work. For love to work, it has to have an action and a reaction. So this week, we're going to talk about the action, which is God's part. Next week, we're going to talk about the reaction, which is our part. And it has to have one against the other, because you do understand, I can love someone immensely. There were young ladies in high school that I looked at and I thought, oh my gosh, I love them. They didn't know I existed. Okay? That wasn't love, that was infatuation. Love is a two-way street. It is a relationship that goes back and forth. So today we need to define the gift, and then next week we're going to talk about how do I go about receiving that gift. So Romans chapter 5, verses 15 through 18. I forgot to write the page number down. My apologies. But if you go kind of to the middle, Romans, if somebody finds the page number and you want to holler it out, and the ones that are in the pew rack, that's quite all right. But Romans chapter 5, verses 15 through 18, this is what we're going to be at today. But the gift is not like the trespass, for if many died by the trespass of the one man, how much more did God's grace and the gift that came by the grace of the one man, Jesus Christ, overflow to the many? Nor can the gift of God be compared to the results of the one man's sin. The judgment followed one sin and brought condemnation, but the gift followed many trespasses and brought justification. For if by the trespass of one man death reigned through that one man, how much more will those who receive God's abundant provision of grace and the gift of righteousness reign in life through the one man, Jesus Christ? Consequently, just as one trespass resulted in condemnation for all people, so also one righteous act resulted in justification for the life of all people. Now, I read that, and I didn't put it up on the screen because I wanted you just to listen to it. And the first thing I think is that sounds confusing because there are a lot of churchy words in there. But here's the thing. They're not really churchy words. They're words that we're very familiar with. What? There you go, 1,116, if you wish to follow along in the Pew Rack Bible there. So the confusing words, and they're not really churchy words, they're words that we are familiar with. It's just that when we stick them in the Bible, we think they become churchy. And the first word we come in, that we come to the word trespass. Now we read it there, we think, well, what does it mean trespass? Well, we know what trespass means, right? We go down the road every now and then, there's a big sign that says no trespassing. What does that mean? They don't want you on their property. Trespassing simply means going somewhere we are not supposed to be. That's all it means. Now, we also get the word grace. And grace is another one of those words. We want to make it a churchy word, but it's not a churchy word. Grace has been along. That idea of grace came well before we ever had the New Testament put together. The idea of grace, which is getting a result we did not deserve. If I am riding down the road and a cop pulls me over because I'm running 75 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone, and he does not give me a ticket, he has shown me both grace and mercy. Okay, mercy if he would have paid the ticket. But letting me go is grace. I'm getting an outcome I did not deserve. Okay? We have the word of judgment. Now, we don't like this word. Don't judge me is what we like to say in our society. You're not supposed to judge people. Be careful how you judge, because the measure that you judge by is the measure you... I understand that. But the idea of judgment isn't what we think. It just means to be held accountable. So when I think about the word judgment, it isn't that somebody is looking down their nose at me. It's the fact that I have somebody that is going to hold me accountable for the actions that I have done. That is the idea of judgment. We have the idea of condemnation. That word is mentioned in this verse. And condemnation is another one of those words that we don't like, but it's not a churchy word. I mean, we have condemned people through all of our humanity's time, have we not? We condemn people to prison. We condemn people to have to do this. We condemn people to have to do that. We condemn kids to go to school. We condemn a lot of people out there. It just means that you are being punished for doing something. Okay, you're not condemned to go to school. That's actually a privilege. Okay, but we condemn people. You're being punished. It's not something that they're doing because they're mad at you. It's because something that you have done in your life. We have the word of justified. Now, again, we like to say, well, that's a church word. And it's not a church word. It's actually an English word. Okay, you use it when you write a paper. If you left to justify something, then what does that mean? It means all the words are lined up to the left. If I write justified, then everything is lined up to the right. The word justified just means me made right, put in the correct order, put in the correct line. Then we have the word righteousness. Oh my gosh, big church word. Oh, get that away from me. No, it's not a church word. We have people that are self-righteous, are they not? That is not a church idea. Righteousness is just the idea of having moral or some kind of standard that you live your life by. So, see, all of these words that we throw out there, they really aren't that big of a churchy idea. It's really more of an idea that when you put them together, it tells you something about the gift, and that's the word that I actually want you to focus on. See, while you were hearing all of the church words and maybe saying, this is too confusing, I'll never be able to understand what Barry's talking about this morning, I want you to do note in those verses I just read to you, the word gift was mentioned 5 times. But somehow in the middle of all of those other great big church words, we miss the idea that God has a gift for us. It's a gift that has already been purchased. It's already been paid for. It's already been wrapped. It's already been unwrapped. It's already been presented to us. And it's just a matter of whether we want the gift in our life or not. And so this idea of the Romans chapter 5 is just outlining how the gift works. Now, have you ever gotten a gift that you don't know how to use? You know, somebody this morning was talking to me that they bought a smartphone. It didn't come with any instructions. And then how do you know how to use a smartphone? You ask a teenager, right? Because they all know. It just kind of like comes with, they just have instructions written in their head how to use these things. But you understand. Well, sometimes we get things and we don't know how to use them. And so right here in Romans chapter 5, Paul was telling us, this is how you use the gift that's been given to you. And it starts with the idea of this first man. Now, we talked about him a few weeks ago. He has a name. His name is Adam, which, by the way, if you translate it from the actual original language, it just means first man. Okay? He was first. He was here first. And we discussed him last week and the week before that. And it says, Adam trespassed. He went where he was not supposed to go. That's all it means. It means Adam made a choice. God said, look, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. All the other things you can eat of, all the other things you can do, all the other places you can go, don't go there. But Adam did. He went exactly where God hung the no trespassing sign. Adam went and he ate. And so God told him what would that death would follow when he did that. God told him, hey, Adam, if you do this, there's going to be some consequences to it. Things bad are going to happen if you do this. And so since Adam went there, it isn't that God is not being loving. You see, the things that followed is the first thing that followed was the idea of judgment. Now, God was not looking at Adam and saying, well, Adam, I'm just going to write you off. Adam, you're not worth the time of day. No, that's not what he said. But you do understand that this the idea of judgment. That he said, hey, look, Adam, did you eat of the tree?
Yes.
Adam, did I tell you what was going to happen if you ate of the tree?
Yes.
So since Adam had the knowledge up front, and he chose to do it anyway, isn't it justified in the fact that God would say, well, then you have to deal with the consequences of what's going to happen? See, judgment isn't the idea that we're downing somebody. We are holding them accountable for the action that are being held. And that is what God is doing here. He's saying, you know what? You chose. It was your decision. So now you have to deal with the consequences. That is what judgment is. And, of course, what that brings us is this idea of condemnation. God told Adam, the day you eat of the fruit, you shall surely die. Now, sometimes this gets very confusing because guess what? The day that they ate of the fruit, Adam did not physically die. But the moment Adam ate of the fruit, they realized they were naked. Because spiritually, that chasm that we saw in that video was created. There was a separation between God and humanity that was put there that we cannot jump across. Did you like the idea when the little man tried to jump between the middle of the chasm? He just went going right on down to the bottom because we can't span it. Short of God doing something, we are all condemned to the exact same thing because we understand the issue is for Adam. But do you understand the idea that we've all sinned? Don't believe me? Just examine your life. Can you go back in your life anywhere, any point in time between the age you are right now and the moment you were born and think of something that you've done wrong? Just one. Okay, you just got to find one. And if you find one, then that means you're guilty of all. See, that's what James tells us. If you've committed one sin, God doesn't have a weighted. I'm sorry, there isn't a scale, there isn't a bell curve, you know, where, you know, stealing's not as bad as, lying's not as bad as stealing, and, you know, murder's way over. Understand, God is a straight line. One sin means that you could be guilty of all of them. So since we've all sinned, then we all have Adam's problem, do we not? That means we all live under the same judgment that Adam lived under. We are all subject to condemnation. Not because God is unkind. Not because God does not love us. Not because God is a killjoy. Not because God wants to suck out the fun of our life. It's because God had a standard that he asked humanity to live by. And he gave them the ability to do it. And humanity has chosen a different path. And understand, when you choose a different path, you deal with the destination that's the end of the path. That's just the way it works. I mean, God's not being unfair. He's being totally fair. As a matter of fact, he went beyond the idea of fair. Because even after man sinned, even after man made his own choices, even after man went off the rails, even after man chose to do it his way, God said, you know what? I'm going to introduce you to the second man. And the second man is an important concept, not the second man that ever lived, the second man in the way that God is looking at things. The second man is, well, his name is Jesus Christ. And, well, Jesus is indeed the one and only Son mentioned in John 3:16. So that's how the verse works. For God, starts with God initiated, so loved the world, and now we have God's action that he gave his one and only Son, and his name is indeed Jesus. He's a gift. Why is that important? Because I didn't earn it. Okay? Jesus didn't come because God looked down at my life and said, you know, Barry, you're okay. You're cool. You know, yeah, you got your problems. You got a few rough edges. Yeah, maybe we need to figure out how to tie a tie around your neck sometimes. I don't know. There's some things that we can improve in your life. But you know what? You're so awesome that I'm just going to, I'm going to pay you, or you deserve. No. It's a gift. It's God looking across my life and said, what is your life missing? Aren't those the gifts that you love the most? When you have something that is missing from your life and somebody knew your life well enough to go out and to buy you exactly what you were missing, something that you could not afford for yourself, and bring it to you and hand it to you, are those not the gifts that you appreciate the most in life? Something that you use every single day. I received a lot of gifts for Father's Day that most of them I don't know where they are. But my kids know which one is my favorite gift they ever give me for Father's Day. It's a piggy bank. It's a big Dallas Cowboy piggy bank that sits on my dresser. And you know how they know I like it? Because I'm constantly using it. I'm constantly putting change in it. It's just something that I always use, and I'm always talking about feeding the piggy, because then we turn the piggy into other money, and then we get to go do fun things. So I guess it's a gift that kind of gives back to them eventually. So it works two ways. But you understand, a gift is something that comes into my life. It's something that I need, something that I want. A gift that I don't need that you bring me, and I just kind of open it, and I'm like, yeah, that's nice, thank you. And I put it in the corner, and I never use it. It wasn't a very practical gift because it serves no value in my life. So God looked at it across my life, and he said, what are you missing from your life? See, Jesus came to put back what Adam messed up. See, Adam had a choice all the way back at the beginning of time. Adam could have said, no tree for me. Wouldn't that make a cool t-shirt? No tree for me. Adam could have said, I choose perfection. I choose relationship over God with what I think I want. But that's not what Adam chose. He messed up. He chose the tree over God. He chose knowledge over relationship. And so Jesus came to fix it, to put it all back, to make it all better. And the question becomes, how does this work? Hebrews chapter 9, verse 22 tells us, in fact, the law requires that nearly everything be cleansed with blood. And without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. That is an important issue. Because in order to fix the price, somebody, in order to fix the problem, somebody had to sacrifice. Now, God painted a picture for this in the Old Testament. At the temple, at every entrance of the temple, there were these altars. And if you sinned, you had to bring a sin offering to the altar. And it wasn't like a butcher shop where you bring the animal in, they take it in the back, and they do, no. They would put the animal up on there, and you would have to stand there as they would slit the animal's throat and allow the blood to go across the altar. And then when the blood had stopped flowing, they'd light the match, and they'd incinerate the rest of the beast. That was a sin offering. And so every time you sinned, the way it was supposed to work is every time you sinned, you were supposed to bring a sin offering. You know, some of the writings back in that time said the blood flowed from the temple like a river. Because everybody that ever thought they had a sin had to do this. Could you imagine if our worship services started this way? We're going to start today by doing forgiveness. Everybody go out and buy a sheep, and we're going to bring them down here, and this is what we're going to do. We'd have low attendance Sunday. I'm not kidding you. Because you know what? It became very public, did it not? Oh, look, there's Janie. They got two sheep. I wonder what they did this week. You know, it was a very public display of what you were doing. Everybody knew your sin. They knew why you were there in that line. Well, they would be in the line too, but there were other kinds. You could offer, they could be offering a grain offering, which was a thankful offering, but you got the sheep. They know why you're there. You get the idea here. See, something had to be sacrificed, and God said, you know what? That's just a picture of how this is going to work better in the future. Because that sacrifice, my lamb was slain. I went out the next week and I sinned. Guess what I had to do next week? To do it all over again. And the next week, and the next week, and I guess if I'm really doing it right, the next day, and the next day, I guess I was really doing it right the next, I just live at the temple is where I probably would spend most of my time. But God said, I got to come up with a sacrifice that is morally righteous. That means free from sin. That means nothing. Somebody that could come and live amongst humanity, as humanity, and then live it perfectly to become the ultimate sacrifice for God. See, the price was too steep for us. Because I don't have anything perfect in my life. I don't. I mean, I'd like to think I do, but I don't have a thing that I can offer God that's perfect. I mean, everything here has some kind of a flaw in it. Even when the Hebrews went and they picked out the best sheep they could find, there was still something wrong with it. It always had a defect because the price is just too steep. I can't afford this gift. And this is where the idea of grace comes in. So God decided to pay the price for us. God looked out across our life and he says, you know what? You don't have enough. You don't have payment. There is nothing that you can do to fix this issue. The only thing that I can do is go shopping for you. Interesting enough, on the original Black Friday, when God turned the lights out for 3 hours in the middle of the day and said, you know what? I'll pay. I'll pay. See, we owed, but God paid. Isn't that amazing? Have you ever been to one of those things and you've gone to a restaurant and you've eaten your meal and somebody else paid for your meal? Didn't the meal taste a little bit better when somebody else is buying? I hear it has less calories when somebody else is paying for it. So, but when somebody else buys you that meal, you understand it tastes a lot better because you were appreciative. And God said, you know what? You owe. You're the one that committed the sin. You're the one that deserves judgment. You're the one that deserves condemnation. You're the one that did all of this. But you know what? I love you so much. I am willing to pay the price in full. God's sacrifice gave us a way to have an open relationship. See, back in the Old Testament, when they had that temple and they got done sacrificing, they still didn't get to walk in fellowship with God. They could go into one little small section of the temple, but to get all the way to God, there were these thick veils between them and God. Nobody was allowed in God's presence. There was no open relationship. Even after you sacrificed your lamb, there were still barriers between you and God. But on the Friday that Christ gave his life, and you know what? He sacrificed for us. It says the veil there in the temple was torn from bottom to top, signifying that, you know what? The path is open. The gift has been purchased. What an amazing gift that is. Better than anything I could go out and buy at a store and wrap up and put under a tree. Better than anything that I could ever even dream up. The ultimate gift. But here's the question. Have you personally received the gift?